Hey, what's up? It's the Black and Jew podcast, and guess what? It's an episode.
Finally, going, fucking episode 51. Jesus Christ. God damn. That shit was fucking brutal. God, I'm sorry we haven't been podcasting lately, folks. It's not because I've been lazy like usual. It's because I had quite a tumultuous month, if you shall say. I don't think Reggie, you don't even know what happened, really.
I don't even know what happened. That's how tumultuous it was. I couldn't even, like, well,
it's like, you know, I heard that when they do that show, when they do that show, Hell's Kitchen, or the, you know, the show with Gordon Ramsay, like Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. I heard when they do that show, they're not allowed to talk to Gordon Ramsay off camera at all.
And, no way, for real?
Yeah, they're not. And that's because they want to get all the juicy details. And a little behind the scenes for you Black and Jew listeners, we do the same exact thing on the Black and Jew podcast because we want to make sure to get all those juicy details. So Reggie has no idea what happened to me, why we haven't been podcasting. He does not know why. Well, you sort of know why, but not exactly.
Yeah, so what I know is that you got your new job, and you've been going through very intense training, and you lost your voice. Yeah, that's what I know.
It was pretty fucking crazy.
But we're doing the Gordon Ramsay thing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I learned how to cook. I learned how to make scrambled eggs from him that are amazing.
Oh, that's those are bomb-ass scrambled eggs. Did you get creme fraiche and shit and put it in there?
Yes.
Like he recommends?
Well, actually,
oh, my
God. I did
not
have creme fraiche. I used sour cream.
Nice.
And it still worked out.
I think creme fraiche is like sour cream and cream cheese or some shit. That's what I heard.
Yeah, like it's
really easy to make it home.
Yeah, it's cream cheese. It's lighter. That's what it is. It makes the eggs fluffier.
Yeah.
You can substitute it with cream cheese or sour cream. But I use sour cream. And oh my gosh, those eggs. Phenomenal.
Yeah, look at Gordon Ramsay, how to make eggs, people. Look at that shit on the internet.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. So this is what fucking happened to me. Jesus, it's been quite a tumultuous month or so. So I got hired in my new job. I went through training, which was 8 hours a day. I had to study some information that after my 8 hours of day training, and like it started at 8 a.m. and ended around like 4:30 or 5. You know, since I haven't really worked a regular job since I've got diagnosed with cancer in 2010. So like this was the most rigorous schedule I've had in years. I think my body just couldn't fucking take it. And I shouldn't have been going home and studying, because I'm a tour guide at a big studio, which shall remain nameless. And that was what the training was for. So I was learning about a big studio during the day, and then I would go home and train. And it was just like I didn't really give myself a break. So I trained for 3 weeks. Then once I finished that, they gave me an evaluation. I passed that. It went pretty well. And I got food poisoning. My last week of training, I got food poisoning at a Mexican flea market. And then
first mistake.
Yeah, that was a big mistake. It was like, oh, it's so real and authentic. And then I got fucking botulism from the mayonnaise that had been sitting outside or whatever. It was a cool place. It was like
stomach couldn't handle it.
No, it really couldn't. It was like and I was looking, I'm like, these sanitary practices do not look sound. Christine was like, don't worry about it though, because everyone eats here. And they seem to be fine. And I'm like, yeah, that's true, I guess. But at the same time, I think they have a little bit more immunity to it than I do, because I got sick as fuck, ate really good churros, though. So I go to the street fair in the Piñata district, which is where everyone buys piñatas for their Mexican birthday parties. And it felt like home, because everything was in Spanish, which was pretty cool. And
that's awesome.
And yeah, I went and I ate the shitty food. I got food poisoning. I was throwing up the next day on Sunday, and then I had to go to work on Monday for training. And chemo kind of prepared me for food poisoning, because everyone talks about how horrific food poisoning is. But after chemo, I just really can't come around to call it horrific, just because it was like at one point I felt like that every day for like 6 months in a row. So, you know, I'm fucking used to it. Then after that, on my last day, I felt like a fucking sack of garbage. My throat hurt. I felt like shit. And I went on Ride-Alongs with another tour guide, and like kind of gave the tour myself, but with someone there to supervise or whatever. And then I just went home, and then I, like 2 hours after my first day, I couldn't talk. Like this is the most that I could talk. Like, this is as loud I could get. Like, that's how fucking bad it was. It was impossible to talk. And my job involves talking for 6 hours a day. So I couldn't work for 2 weeks. And all the trainees that were like a week behind me, by the time I went back, they all had uniforms and they were better at giving the tour than I was.
Goodness.
I couldn't do stand up. I didn't do stand up when I was in training. And then I couldn't do stand up for an additional 2 weeks. So it was like a month and change and I couldn't do stand up. It was horrible. Horrible.
That is horrible.
Yeah,
it's so weird how important your voice is like right now.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's important for stand up because you got to talk. That's stand up. But now you have a whole job tied to it. You have a whole livelihood tied to it.
I'm speaking for six That's hours crazy. A day. It's like, holy shit.
And I mean, what do you do to like manage your voice now? Do you like tea? You know, lozenges.
Tea.
What?
I'm just waiting for it to come back.
Are you just waiting for it to come back?
I'm still hoarse, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering whether it was my headphones or it was you, but like...
Your headphones are fine.
You sound very different.
Yeah, my voice is hoarse because, you know, it was audible enough. I probably should have taken 2 more days off, but I was gone for 2 weeks and I'm like, I'm not going to make any more scheduling requests if I could physically do my job. So...
Yeah, you also don't... You just got the job. You don't want to like be off of the job for too much. You just got it.
I literally, and it's seasonal, so they got to decide whether they want to rehire you.
Oh, snap. That's crazy.
So I'm like, you know, I'm just going to do it and then rest my voice on my days off. But dude, I was audible. I just finished with my laryngitis. I was finally audible. And then I go to speaking for 6 hours a day. So it's like the road to recovery is a little slow.
All right. Well, hey, you're on the road to recovery, and that's important.
Yeah.
And like any other difficulties, or was that just it? Like, just experienced.
It was that, and it was just I got depressed, to be honest. Like, got really depressed in those 2 weeks, just because everything was going so good. Like, even like there's something that feels good about coming home exhausted and not having a lot of free time. So I finally was working, you know, which is something I've been wanting to do forever. Finally able to do it. I get a job. I'm working. It's going well. And then, I get knocked out for 2 weeks and I can't talk about it because I can't fucking talk. So I'm just kind of sitting there in my head, you know, typing out things to Christine, but that's not really the same. Yeah. It got me fucking depressed. I wasn't doing stand up, you know, I hadn't done that for a while. So, and it was kind of brutal. And it's funny cause like I've had cancer, but and that's trying, but this was trying in a completely different way, you know, just because it kind of knocked me off my horse for a little while. And I was just like, fuck, dude, this sucks. I don't know why, but it just got me really down.
I've been in that same kind of funk recently myself, because in the month that you know what it is? This is the astrology explanation as to why like things for everyone went to shit. Like everyone I've spoken to, they've all had like a weird thing happen to them, and like they've all had like a strange injury or like a transition in the job. Apparently, once spring started, everyone's like 12th house moved to the first house, which is some astrology thing for like these traits and some bullshit. And on top of that, it was a full moon, the transition to a new season. Everyone was transitioning houses. And I think there was an eclipse. So all that combined, according to astrology, created like just fucking chaos for everybody. And I, you know, me trying to create, like trying to just settle dissonance, I'm like, damn, you're right. But, you know, in all honesty, I can't explain it. But I did. I also had a rough month. Not as rough as you.
What happened? Yeah. What happened to you? What's been happening to you since we last spoke?
I've gotten a dog.
Adorable dog.
I have a dog now. Yeah, he's adorable. He's really well behaved. He sheds like nobody's business.
What kind of dog?
It's a pit bull. It's a pit bull American bull terrier mix.
I love pit bulls.
He's a sweet dog. Great. He's very low key. Like he's awesome. He's a great dog. But since getting him, I've been kind of broke for like a straight 2 weeks. Yeah. Just like all my money has gone towards the dog and then like making the dog healthy. Because he came, I adopted him. The story is he used to be Haley's neighbor's dog. Like Haley had a neighbor that lived under him, under her. Spoiler alert. my girlfriend's actually a dude. Had a neighbor that lived under her. And Yummy used to be in the in their backyard. So this guy, he was moving, and I wanted to adopt Yummy because, well, I had known Yummy, and he's a really good dog, and it's very sweet, and I have personal experience with him. But let me just say this. I am literally not ready to have a dog in my life, but I have one, which is kind of like, I think, isn't that how most pets happen? No one's really ready to have a pet, if you think about it. You can honestly go without a pet. But anyway, I have a pet. He's actually right here. So anyway, I talked to the guy, and he's like, oh, I wish you would have spoken to me sooner. I had to kind of like scam to get Yummy into the Miami-Dade Animal Shelter. Now, the Miami-Dade Animal Shelter is all the way in Hialeah. Uh-huh. What this guy ended up telling me was that he went in the middle of the night, tied Yummy to a post, and left him there. And then when the workers came in or the volunteers came in the next day, that's how they processed Yummy into the animal shelter.
Oh, my God. Wait, so you got him from the animal shelter?
Yeah, got him from the animal shelter where he was, you know, essentially where he was abandoned.
So this dude, but I thought, why didn't the dude just give you the dog?
Oh, because I didn't get to him in time. He didn't like, he didn't make it difficult on purpose. Although that would have made me think that would have probably made me like, man, do I really want to go to Hialeah, process a dog, then get one? That probably would have made the decision less spontaneous. But no, he just left it there. And then that same day, I put him on hold. And then just a week later than that.
So you talk to this guy and you're like, hey, I want Yummy. And did he knew this before he put up the dog for adoption?
He knew what? That I wanted to adopt him? No, he didn't. He didn't know that. He didn't know that. He was moving, so he had to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And Yummy was bought under a bridge in Overtown from a homeless man. So, you know, he didn't really have his papers in order. So to get him to the animal shelter would have probably been like a hassle. Like, you know, to process him like the right way would have been a hassle.
Oh, yeah.
So
poor Yummy had to sit tied to a pole. That sucks.
Yeah, outside. Any number of things could have happened.
I don't understand how people give up their dogs like that.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Like, if you have a dog, you have a dog. Like, it's, what are you going to do? You want to take up this responsibility, and hey, guess what? Here it is. Now, own up to it. But that's not what happened in this case. So now, Yummy lives with me.
We've bent over backwards so many different ways to keep Hugo. Like, Hugo fucking rules our life. But I would never consider giving him away. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Christine's mom's always like, just send him to Chicago with us and we'll hang on to him for a little while. Just to give you a break or we don't get evicted. There was some neighbor drama that happened recently. Did I tell you about this? Have we spoken since this happened?
Yeah, we spoke about the neighbor drama that almost got us.
Have I told you about how they almost got us evicted?
No, you told me that they were like really like not cool about anything. Like,
oh, they were super uncool about it. Like, because this is what happened with Hugo. So we get this thing that says in our mailbox that says that whoever's been complaining about Hugo went to the property management company, and above the head of the management of our specific community, and complained about Hugo. And they put like first strike. They had three check marks: first strike, second strike, and then final notice, final eviction. And so I'm like, we're like two strikes away from getting evicted. So I was talking to my mom, my dad about the situation. My dad's like, look, you really have no legal recourse here. obviously your property community. I think this is the difference between the Jewish way of doing it and the Cuban way of doing it. Because for my dad, it was like the Jewish lawyer way of dealing with the situation. And me too. I'm like, look, Christine, legally, we really don't have a leg to stand on because the property manager has sided with our neighbors in the past. They think that we're breaking our lease. There's really nothing we can do about it. And Christine's like, fuck that. Like, I don't believe that at all. These people are being completely unreasonable. And I'm like, look, in the past, our property management company hasn't seen them as being unreasonable. So she's like, no, fuck that. They're being assholes. I'm gonna go to them and I'm gonna write them a letter and I'm gonna explain to them that our neighbors are being dickheads. And I'm like, sweetie, there's no way that's gonna work. Hugo's gonna have to go to Chicago and we're gonna have to find a different place. So, but she's like, fuck that. So she goes to the head office, and I was like, yeah, she's gonna come back and we're gonna have to send Hugo to Chicago. And she's like, we won. I did it. I convinced the lady in the office that these people were being unreasonable and they should go fuck themselves. And so now we resolve the situation. We can keep Hugo. I'm like, well, that's the Cuban way of doing it. Just get angry, you know? Just get mad and be like, I do not believe, no, this dog is going to stay. And that's what happens.
That's exactly what happened. Christine marched over there with a guayabera and a cigar and then just started like, speaking in broken English. Yeah. That's awesome.
Speaking in broken English.
those people sounded so like such like assholes.
And he doesn't really bark anymore. He just like we watched him on the fucking video monitor. He wasn't barking, like barely at all.
Oh, okay. Those people. Screw them. Glad you're keeping Hugo.
Yeah, me too. Keeping Hugo. I love him. I love that crazy little fucker.
I'm starting to get warming up to Yummy. I'm kidding. I like Yummy. I like him.
You're going to be infatuated. You're going to be infatuated with Yummy. Just give it some time.
I am not infatuated. Like, I mean, I love him, but like, I'm probably not infatuated.
Why do you say that? Why do you think he'll be infatuated?
Just because I'm just so like, I'm honestly kind of anti-pet. Like, I am. I know.
You really are not ready for, you really should not have a dog. You were right about that.
I just like you will live and you will live well. That is your privilege. That is how I'm going to treat you, dog. Well, I'm gonna walk you. You're gonna go to the vet, and you know what really sucks? Recently, he has kennel cough, so I have to take him to the vet, and he has to take antibiotics. And I'm just like, oh fuck, really? He has kennel cough. He just coughs and hacks and wheezes. And like, it really sucks.
That does suck.
I'm so used to like a certain level of comfort and ease. And I don't really think like a pet is for me. Like, honestly, I think Yummy will be my only dog ever. I mean, I'll fantasize about having a dog. Like, I like that romantic idea of like, oh man, I could throw a ball and the dog will catch it and it will like, you know. I don't know.
Hugo can't even play catch. He doesn't know what to do. He'll sniff a ball and just walk away. He doesn't know how to play. Like, it's so funny.
I could actually play catch with Yummy here. I'll toss like his toy. He'll run after it and get it, but he won't come back to me. He'll run past me and then like kind of like drop it. And then I have to go there and then pick it up and then toss it again.
That's adorable. That's freaking adorable. You're gonna get so attached to Yummy, like it's gonna be this irrevocable bond that you create with a dog. Like, you know, you just become dogs with your dog. What can I say?
We'll see. I'm still a young dog owner. He still needs to get over his kennel cough. So once he's a lot healthier, we'll see.
Oh man, but it feels so good to be podcasting again. Fuck,
yeah,
dude.
I know, God, it's been a while.
So shitty. It's one of the most that's the shittiest I've felt mentally in like in years. Mm-hmm. And like I fucking had cancer, you know? Like like I haven't been that down in a while and like in years, and like I've been through a lot of bullshit, you know? It's funny. I don't know. I just feel like the human body and the human mind was created to not be satisfied unless one is working hard.
Yeah, I believe that I can see the rationale behind that. There's a lot of satisfaction one could derive from like good work or just work in general.
Yeah, I think your body is created to be in motion and be working all the time. And I think that there's a reward from it that if you don't have, like, your body's made to reward you for working. And if you don't have that in your life, it makes you fucking sad.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. To work towards something is very good. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of like new agey people that'll describe like the natural state of a person is like in creation or in motion, you know? Mm-hmm. We're like, we're all just tiny little gods and we can create what we create. And in the case of us, it's like comedy, writing jokes and stuff like that and performing. That's what we're creating. In the case of like, you know, a sculptor, well, that's more obvious, but like in the case of someone whose hobby is like playing the guitar and they write their own little songs, they don't really pursue that anyway. Like creation, working towards something, working hard, and that's very good. I totally believe that. I think it's kind of why, like, I know a lot of old people that find it hard to retire. You know, like,
yeah,
that kind of want to keep on working.
I think a lot of the happy old people, like, yeah, they're not working, but they'll have like a garden that they tend to. They got shit that they do, you know?
Exactly.
And I find it's funny because the less free time I have, the more I get accomplished in that free time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like time becomes a scarce resource.
I'm actually like, I'm learning that more and more, like this past month, with having a dog, you know, my semester winding down, mm-hmm. you know, hosting Casa and like doing my job and then trying to work in comedy and into all that. Like, I've noticed, like, you know, your time can really, like, if you don't manage your time well, that can fuck you up.
Yeah.
And it seems so obvious to say, but like, it's just even more. It's more prevalent of a lesson now than it was before, because like right now I'm in like this, I'm just in this weird space where like, oh, I, you know, there's this shit I gotta do, and I'm spreading myself way too thin.
Yeah,
and it's all because of things that I did before stuff started getting more serious. That are just collapsing now. You know, like, you know, like my precedents I set are now catching up with me. It's like it's like walking a dog.
Uh-huh.
The dog will pull, and I sometimes don't feel in control of like that pulling. Like I can't pull back. I can't like direct the walk. The walk is just going to take me, and it's going to take me to a destination. And then I just have to deal with the consequences at that point.
Here's one thing I missed about podcasting is hearing you making analogies and not knowing what the fuck you're talking about.
What are you talking about? That was perfect.
I don't understand. Turn it back. Wait, let's start from the beginning. What are you talking about exactly? I did not follow that in the least. Maybe okay, the listeners are thinking I'm retarded right now. I do not understand that in the least.
What I'm trying to say is like things that I've done like before this moment where I'm feeling like this stress or like where I'm feeling like I'm not in control of things.
Yeah.
Is because of the things I did before, like the precedents I set, and now they're coming back to bite me in the butt.
You're saying like your bad habits?
Yeah, like bad habits or like, you know, things I'm ignoring, things I'm procrastinating.
Oh, okay.
They're right here. They're catching up with me.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm trying with the analogy I'm making is like, it's like when you're walking a dog and the dog pulls. Well, I don't feel in control of the walk.
Yeah.
I just feel like the dog, which is representing like my responsibilities, is just going to take me somewhere just because I'm forced to be within the situation that is made by my lack of consistency or like action when it comes to my responsibilities. Now the dog is directing the walk. I'm not, and I just gotta stick along for the ride and deal with the consequences afterwards. That's what I'm trying to say.
You should really read the book The Switch. It's a great book about just that exact. They use the analogy of an elephant, you should read the book The Switch. Check that shit out. The cover has like a big light switch on it. It's like a business book that's meant for developing good business habits and like how to structure your company and shit like that. But it's completely relevant in your everyday life. And one of the thing it says is like, it's kind of like your willpower is an elephant and why it's really important to like schedule your time and lay everything out. So it's like if you have an elephant and you're like in a big field of grass and you're trying to get the elephant to go in one direction, but it'll get distracted and go in different directions and you'll keep fighting with it. And that's your like willpower. But you can only have so much strength to fight with the elephant before it just does whatever the fuck it's going to do, aka procrastinating or whatever. So instead, what you need to do is make a path for the elephant. The elephant will follow the path on autopilot, and that's like a schedule or something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I try to do. Yeah, I need to do that. I actually have that on a to-do list today, is like make a schedule for writing and shit.
Yeah, I've actually, I've also been like kind of like a, I'm kind of disheartened or disinterested in like comedy recently, but I recently felt like a revival in like my passion for it. Not that I fell off from like pursuing comedy very far, but I just found
you get in ruts. Everyone gets in ruts.
Yeah, I was in a rut, is what I was. I was in this really weird rut where like I'd go out to perform less than what I was doing, mm-hmm. and I was also writing less. And then to accommodate for writing less, I would just do like, I would just be more biting, you know, more yeah. hostile with my crowd work. I'd substitute like
substitute writing for hostility. That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was doing. I was substituting actual material for just like going on these little like segues and riffs with the crowd. And most of them were just like, it was mean. I'd have the jokes that I could do on autopilot, but they weren't being said or done the right way. Mm-hmm. And then I'd just rely on like, you know, just this spontaneity to like make up for my lack of writing or my lack of like, you know, like effort. And yeah. I was in that rut. But recently, Daniel Reskin hit me up and he asked me to do the local showcase for the South Beach Comedy Festival.
What?
And I'm going to do it after Chappelle's Thursday night show.
Sweet. So,
yeah,
that's a great show to do. I think I did that last year. Yeah, I think it was last year I did it.
Yeah, and I sat myself down and wrote like a solid five. Like I collected myself, I centered, and then I just wrote a solid five, which I took up to Shirley's, and then it did so well. Like it banged out the crowd. Everybody was like revitalized, and like I mm-hmm. really felt good because I wasn't doing like these long like riffs. I wasn't doing all the, you know, I wasn't trying to substitute actual material. I went back to my roots, which is like very technical. Like the way I do comedy is like I'm very technical. I'm not like a Patrice or a Big Jay Oakerson. I'm very technical. I have like this technicality to myself.
And no, you are not, sir. Neither of us are. Definitely neither of us are a Patrice. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I'm trying to emulate, but yeah, we're not. I mean, that's you know, that's reaching for the stars,
mm-hmm.
which is important to do. But then again, that's Patrice. So.
Oh, you in Miami with your crowds and not wanting to kill yourself doing comedy. That's just cherish it. Cherish it for as long as you can. I miss doing stand-up in Miami so much. Oh, my God. Not having to fucking wait 3 hours for your name to be called in a lottery. Having more than 3 minutes on stage. Having having at least two people that were not comics in the crowd. When I see two people in the crowd here that are not comics, I'm like, all right, this is a good open mic. We got a crowd here.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah. you'll move to a comedy city and you'll see what I mean. Or you won't.
Yeah.
Or you'll be smarter than me and get on more book shows. But and I see Irene Morales, it seems like things are going good for her in New York. She's on a bunch of shows and shit.
That's awesome. I'm so glad.
Yeah, Irene
is a talent that I need to see a lot of people that, you know, we did comedy with like be national headliners. Like I just need to see that happen.
Yeah, Lisa Correo just moved to New York.
Yeah.
I want like Lisa is she's at the point in the career where like she'll start making moves, you know? She's there, that she's been doing it for quite some time, and I just wanted to see her be so successful. Like, nothing would make me happier to see Lisa Correo be super fucking successful, because she's so talented and she's such a great person that, like, I just want her to fucking be able to redo a bathroom with comedy money.
Yes, exactly.
Be making that.
I want that for so many people down here in this scene. Oh my gosh. I think about that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I garner any level of, like, fame or notoriety, like, in comedy, I'm just gonna like, everyone's coming up with me. Well, not everyone, but you know,
some people. Yeah, that's it's funny, you know, because it's like, coming out here has made the goal of success seem at the same time more obtainable and less obtainable.
The goal of success, more. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
It's funny because, like, it's more obtainable. It seems more obtainable because you're closer to it. But at the same time, it seems less attainable because it's like, oh, these are how many people are trying to do what I'm doing. Oh, wow.
Yeah, these are that's how many lot of people also have dreams.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. Oh, this is how tall the ladder is to the top. Oh, okay. I see.
It's like,
and I'm on the bottom rung right now. Okay. Yeah,
it's like when you go to a draft day, you know? I mean, maybe it's a bit more funneled because, you know, sports are very specific. Like, draft day or training day things for, like, for the NFL aren't that big, right? It's like 80 or like 100 people.
Yeah.
But, like, to the field, that's big, you know? So then I can only imagine what a young football player straight out of college is like, oh, wait, everyone wants to be famous? Oh.
It's probably easier for them just because they're like, all right, there's not that many people. Like, there's, like, most people can't do this. But in comedy, it's like any schmuck could be a comedian.
And any schmuck can be a comedian. It's been proven to me time and time again that schmucks are usually the ones that are going up and trying to be comedians.
Yeah, it's funny because, and here it's not just like, oh, there's a bunch of people that want to do it. It's like, oh, there's a bunch of really talented people that want to do it.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
The elixir that you need to make to be successful is like, you see what it is and it's just like, holy shit. Like, the baseline is really, really high here, you know? Like, the minimum here that you need to be is, like, really fucking high. You know, just even at, like, the lower levels. Like, for me, like, I'm a tour guide, but everyone in my group was just like, fucking everyone came in early. Everyone's on top of their shit. Everybody, like, tried the best that they could. Like, there's no fucking half-assing it. Like, you can't full-assing it isn't enough. You need to ass and a half it.
Yeah. It's like when you're in school, like high school, and you're at the top of your class.
Yeah.
But if you, like, okay, if there's 10 people at the top of your class and you're number 10, you know, you need to be doing what everybody else above you is doing, or you need to do more, all right? Just to set yourself apart from, like, the people in high school. Then when you move to college, and let's say you're going from the top of your class in, you know, in your high school, then you go to Harvard.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Everybody else that's in Harvard is also in Harvard. They're doing what you're doing or more.
They were all valedictorians.
Yeah, exactly. We're all valedictorians. How do you set yourself apart from, like, this valedictorian? This one did one more hour of community service than you did. This one has one more medal from some bullshit that you did.
That's such a great analogy, you know? Because then, like, you're on top of your high school class and you're like, all right, I'm doing pretty good. But then you go to the, because when you're in high school, you're insulated from everybody, all the other valedictorians. And then you go to a place that's all valedictorians and you're like, oh, fuck. What I was doing in high school was the top of everyone's game. I was at the top of my game, and that my game was above everyone else's. And then you go to college and it's like, oh, the top of my game is the minimum required here.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. The top of your game is the minimum required here. And that goes with, like, well, that goes with pretty much all fields, but I don't know. It's more and more obvious to me that that's especially true with comedy.
Yeah, like, but entertainment in general, because anybody can do your job.
You
can teach. There's anyone can do your job. Like, you can teach. Like, if you're a petroleum engineer, you've got a lot. Like, there's not a lot of people that can be petroleum engineers.
There's not and, a lot of people that are willingly trying to put in the time to become petroleum engineers. And those that do,
yeah.
Well.
So you could, like, you have a little bit, but in entertainment, it's like in, if you're a petroleum engineer, and that's why it's such a high paid job, it's one of the highest paying jobs out there. Like, you're like, I want to be a fucking petroleum engineer. And then you can be like, no, but I don't want to live there. I want to do this. I want to have these benefits. And then they'll be like, they can't be like, oh, well, fuck off. We got a million petroleum engineers. No, there's not a lot.
Okay.
But in here, like in entertainment, it's like, oh, you don't want to do what we are. You don't want to live within the constraints of what we're. Well, okay, then fuck off. Because we have 300 people that are just as talented, if not more talented than you.
Right now.
Huh?
Like right now in line to do this. What are you doing right now? You don't want to work within my system?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. Like, you don't like being treated like shit? Get the fuck out. Mm. It's like a girl dating in a state school. Like, I was talking to my friend about it, and like, you know, we're talking about the difference between being a girl and a guy in a state school on the dating scene. And she's just like, God, I've been with such shitty guys just because, like, if I demanded some respect, there's a million other hot girls that'll be like, I don't demand respect, and they'll just go to them. So, like, I have to just put up with all this bullshit. Like, you can't be like, oh, I want a monogamous relationship. They'll be like, okay, no, I don't. All right, fine. Well, at least treat me with a little respect. No. Oh, okay, fine. Well, I guess this is what I have to put up with because there's a million other girls competing for the same position, sadly.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with entertainment. It's like, you know, there's a million people that want to do your job that are just as good, if not better than you. You're not the only way, like, you're not indispensable, you know? The only way you make yourself indispensable eventually is when you can make people a lot of money.
Indispensable.
Like, if you can make people a lot of money, you could be a fucking dick, you know? You can do whatever the fuck you want. Like, that's why celebrities can be so demanding. Like, if you're a fucking asshole that makes someone a few million bucks, you can do whatever the fuck you want, you know? But when you're on that lower level, it's just like, no, fuck you. I don't want to deal with this shit. And I don't have to, because a million other people will fucking do it. And it's like, it's funny because coming to Los Angeles from Miami, I meet a lot of people from the Midwest, a lot of people from Ohio at my job, and like Illinois and stuff. And for them, like, LA is superficial and kind of scummy. But for me, I'm like, this place is not scummy at all. You don't even know what scummy is.
You don't know what scummy is.
Like,
scummy.
Like when I was not at work, this girl made up this rumor, was like kind of joking around saying that I was dead, right? And then and I'm like, oh, that's a nice thing to say. And then this guy from Ohio was like, oh, welcome to Los Angeles. And I'm like, dude, in Miami someone would literally kill me and then take my hours. Or they'd make up a rumor I was dead. More realistically, they'd be like, no, bro, I think he's fucking dead. Like, let me get his hours, you know?
Yeah.
So in Miami, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Like, it just, you come from the shadiest place in America. Like, it doesn't get fucking douchier or shadier. I used to work in nightlife in Miami. Like, that's the douchiest and the shadiest you get in all of the fucking United States. So it's like, nothing can faze me.
Nothing can faze me. Oh, you started a shitty rumor? I almost got stabbed.
Yeah.
By my boss. I don't care.
It's so funny.
Oh my gosh, that's real petty though. Like, I mean, it was probably like a harmless, like, oh, he's dead, you know, but like, it's real petty.
I just think, no, that she she was just kidding. That's just her sense of humor. She was just fucking around, but that's just how she is. But yeah, she wasn't being serious. I hope some people didn't think she was serious, but. Maybe they'd have a little memorial. But it was weird because, like, I didn't know anybody there. So, because I only had been working for a day, really. And so I hadn't spent time outside of my training group. So, like, everyone's like, what the fuck happened to this guy? Well, my training group was, but everyone else, like, when I came back to work, I was the only person in the position I was in because, like, everyone had already been giving solo tours for a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, like, and so I was the only newbie in the entire department. So I'm like behind on all this shit. It was just ridiculous.
But I mean, you caught up. You're catching up, right? You're like making moves and killing it right now.
Well, let's not be too hasty. but yeah, I mean, I've given, I think, four tours. No, how many days? What's like 7 tours by myself so far, and I've already kind of gotten to my groove. And they seem to be going pretty well. The people seem to be enjoying themselves, and I'm kind of connecting with them and stuff. Because it's a cool job to do. Like, and you forget because you are on the lot every day that people are like, they don't know this stuff. So you tell them like really interesting facts about the studio, and like you tell them like how iconic certain areas that we're in are. And they're just like, whoa, what the fuck? And like, you kind of like connect with them and you try to act like they're your buddy that you're just geeking out with, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a cool job, but I'm getting in the groove of it, you know, and it's not taking me too long. Of course, I'm sure that I say this now, and what's it called? Like I'm gonna have like a crazy fucking tour group, and it's gonna throw a wrench in my gears completely.
Well, when that happens, it happens.
Yeah.
But just let it happen. Let it be. Deal with it. You'll be prepared for the next time. Kind of like when you you tell a shitty joke, you learn how to recover better the next, you know, every time it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. But on the topic of entertainment and like comedy in general, this is a good segue into the new Daily Show host, Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah. Yeah.
Trevor Noah. Who won? Congratulations! Everybody seems to be for that.
Was he a correspondent first?
Yeah, I believe I think he was a writer and correspondent.
Okay.
Yeah, and then recently he was caught. He caught some heat.
Yeah, some heat for his tweets.
Yeah, for his tweets about overweight people, Asian people, and Jewish people. Like, he just said a bunch of like these. He said a bunch of shitty jokes about like these different groups. And
yeah.
Then usually what happens anytime, like, you know, a comedian, you know, makes some real bad jokes about race or, you know, religion or just people or like, you know, a minority group in general,
yeah.
It sparks a whole new discussion on like what's right for a joke, what makes jokes right. Should comedians be held accountable for what it is, or like what's funny, what's not funny? Is comedy different now? Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, this is, he updated, he says, to reduce my views to a handful of jokes that didn't land is not a true reflection of my character or nor my evolution as a comedian.
Yeah, which is very true. I mean, those jokes are 5 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's a long time in comedy. And remember, back then, you were allowed to make jokes. Like, it doesn't seem like that long of a time, but like, you were allowed to make jokes back then. Like, you can make jokes and then you wouldn't have to resign from your job for making a joke back then.
Yeah.
And this one person, I'm looking at this thing that says, hey, Comedy Central, your new hire, Trevor Noah, is a racist Jew hater. Like, really? Because he made a joke about how, like, what is this? Behind every successful rap billionaire, there is a double as rich Jewish man. That's great. Hashtag beats by dreidel. That's a great tweet. That's fucking funny to me. I don't think like, and someone says this guy seems to have a problem with Jews. You don't have a problem with Jews. Stereotypes are funny sometimes. Come on. Give it a break. I think that's funny.
I mean, I can see the funny. It's kind of hacky, but it's pretty funny. It's pretty well put together. You need every word in that joke to work effectively, which is something I have grown to appreciate. You know what happens with these moments sometimes? Sometimes the comic in me is like, damn, that would have been a fire joke if he just like changed this, maybe did this, or like, damn, that's a real good joke. But then like the person standing outside is like, ah, ooh, why'd you go there? You're going to get some heat now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the jokes kind of were in bad taste, but like, I don't think he should lose his fucking job over it, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. He shouldn't lose his job.
Like, I don't know, man, because it's like, as a comedian, like, I'm pulled in two different directions where it's like, on the one hand, it's like, yeah, I'm like, maybe you shouldn't have said that. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't want to worry about the slippery slope of comedian censorship, you know?
Yeah. I think it was, well, there was a, what's it called? There was a article written on GQ about like how like being really PC is going to be the death of comedy.
Yeah.
And the main takeaway, like if I do you want me to link you the article? I'll link it to you later, but I read it. The main takeaway is something that Patton Oswalt said. Like it referenced something Patton Oswalt said where it was like comedians should be given a space to fail.
Yeah.
But that's what he said. And I told you need that. If I was going to be judged for what I did when I started off 2 years ago and now, then when will I ever be accurately represented through my comedy, through my evolution? Yeah. If we start judging, like, you know, Louis on what he used to do before his kids or, like, you know, before his kids, you know, you need time to fail, and you need to fail in comedy. Unfortunately, the people can see you way too readily, you know, too easily nowadays. When you have to produce content either through Twitter, through podcasts, through your Facebook, or through your Instagram, you're gonna mess up. And what these forms of media, social media, are telling you to do is to get it right the first time. Get it right the first time. It's someone's gonna screen cap it, so get it right the first time, which is not. It's hard.
Yeah, dude, like it happens. And I think Jim Norton brought up a good angle on this too. It's like people are outraged. A lot of them are not really outraged because they're upset. They're outraged because it's fun for them. It's like that dopamine rush you get by feeling better than somebody. You know? Like this joke, let me see, Like someone called him a Jew hater because an anti-Semite. Like, look, he said that Jews are in the record industry. Okay, he said that Jewish chicks don't go down on people, and he said he almost bumped a Jewish kid crossing the road and would have felt bad because he was in a German car. It's like a roundabout Holocaust joke. Are you going to say that he has a problem with Jews? Like, are you fucking serious? Like, is this a fucking neo-Nazi here? Like, come on. Like at that point, you're being willfully ignorant of what's happening, in my opinion. Because, like, that's not, like, the jokes weren't that good, but he's not anti-Semitic. Like, I don't feel uncomfortable around this guy. I don't feel like he's fucking an anti-Semite. He's just making it, like, an easy joke about, you know, Jewish stereotypes, you know what I'm saying? So like, I think people are saying like, oh, he's got a fucking problem with Jews. He's an anti-Semite. And they're getting so outraged about it that like, it's just like, dude, you don't really care about making the world a better place. You just want to be, you want to feel better than someone, you know? It's my opinion.
Yeah. And I can see. I always wonder where is the, like, how can we like just, you know, shine and put a microscope on people's intentions with the joke? That's the other part of this. Yeah. Like, is it all right to say that joke, or is it all right to say that joke as long as there's no malice behind it? Or where's the point where like the joke I'm trying to workshop is like going to go from like, you know, racist to like finally something, you know, either satirical or like something poignant about like race, you know? I mean, to bring up the Artie Lang thing that we spoke about, like his jokes, the one about like wanting to like fuck the ESPN correspondent.
Yeah.
That I can readily identify as someone going too far and making another person uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mostly
yeah.
because the target of the joke was being tweeted at, and then they weren't really jokes, more just like this guy's like inner fantasy ramblings. Yeah.
That's another thing too. It's like this whole thing with Ari Shaffir that happened recently. Do you know about this?
No, I don't.
Ari Shaffir, he had a stand-up special, and there's this comedian that he made fun of, and she's like overweight. She lost one arm because it got ripped off in a car accident. She got ripped off in a car accident when she just moved to LA. I mean, moving to LA is hard enough, and then having your arm ripped off, that's got to be really traumatic. And he was making a joke about how she's really annoying, and she's really fat, and she has a fat people smell, and that she probably can't get under her rolls because, like, she's got one stub of an arm and can't get it under there. And she made this response video where she's like, she laid out all this fucked up shit that happened in her life and was like, and she started crying, and she's like, look, you're... like, what the, don't fucking joke about this shit. Like, we're not buddies. Like, and he did it on a Comedy Central special too. And he used her full name. And like, the reviews have been mixed. Some people say, like, yeah, you shouldn't censor comedians or whatever. And she's just doing this for attention. And then the other people say, Ari Shaffir was just being a fucking asshole. But I think, I think just because you're a comedian doesn't mean that everything you say, you have carte blanche to just be a complete fucking asshole. You know? Yeah. Like, yeah. I worry as a comedian saying this just because, like, I don't want to feed the fire of comedian censorship, but it's like, put yourself in his shoes. Like, would you ever, like, let's say there's some open micer that you didn't, some other comic that you didn't like. Would you go up on stage without talking to them first on Comedy Central and make fun of them for fucking a disability? Like, that's a dickhead thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
Part of me is like, oh, I want to defend him because he's a comic and you should be able to say whatever you want. But on the other hand, I'm like, whoa. Why am I going to defend someone for doing something that I myself would never do and I would think is not an okay thing to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, we got to put, I feel like sometimes you got to put yourself in someone else's shoes. It's like, would I do this? Like, no, I wouldn't do this because, like, yeah. I don't need to defend my right to just be a fucking blatant asshole for no reason, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, like, I don't exactly know what generation of comics Ari Shaffir is from. I think he's, like, relatively contemporary, right?
He's like 41.
Okay. So
he's been around for a little while.
Yeah. He's been doing it for a little while. So he's, like, from the school of, like, Louis. Like, just you know, as using a staple, like, he's from the school of Louis and, like,
I think a little bit later. Like, no, later.
They're in their 40s.
Later than that, though. He's 41, but definitely later than that.
Well, like, what I'm trying to say is, like, what comes into question a lot of the time with these, like, with these situations is, like, the fact that, like, a lot of people will reference that these comedians that, you know, do these things that are usually the ones making these jokes or, like, being very insensitive actually come from, like, that old boys club mentality of comedy where, like, they were just running rampant and unchecked, you know? Mm-hmm. They're just like, I can make fun of anything. I'm a white dude doing comedy. It's all right.
I didn't have to deal with fucking Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't have to deal with fucking Twitter. So you got these, like, old school, like, comics. You got these old school, like, comics who come into this like new scene, this new, like, this new culture where, like, you have, like, these you know, these weird alt comics that, like, know how to handle social media more effectively. Yeah. And then they going from, like, a very specific club setting, like, you know, they're coming from a club setting, not like a setting where, like, people are performing at, like, comic book shops. So whoever's at a club is there for a very specific reason. And it's to see comedy. Whatever it is, just comedy. Make fun of what you got to make fun of. Go where you got to go. But I'm here to see comedy because this is a comedy club. And they booked you, and I like you, or I think I might like you, so I'm here to see comedy. And where else are you going to get it? And nowadays, you can get it from anywhere. Mm-hmm. You can get it from a coffee shop. You can get it from a comic book store. You can get it from your computer. Now you're getting comedy differently. It's reaching more people, and it's touching more people, so it can affect more people. So you can't run unchecked like you could, like, back in the 80s or something.
He came up a little bit later than the 80s, I believe.
A little bit. So, like, 90s, early 90s, mid 90s.
Yeah, I mean, like, 20 years ago, so, like, mid 90s, late 90s. But he didn't really start getting traction until he was on Joe Rogan's podcast regularly. He's also, you ever seen The Amazing Racist?
No.
Oh, well, he's The Amazing Racist. He does these things where, like, he makes fun of, like, he picks up a bunch of Mexicans from a from a restaurant or something, and like takes from the or takes picks up a bunch of Mexicans from a Home Depot, and then brings them to the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Why would he do that?
Because he thinks it's funny. Just Google the Amazing Racist.
That's not funny.
Yeah. I mean, just how he is, dude. It's just like, you're like, come on, like, just don't be a dick. Like, just comedy's fine. Like, if you're going to be like, make fun of someone. Yeah. But just like, there's a, just because you're on the stage doesn't mean you're absolved from being a fucking dick. You know what I mean?
And just because you like communicate this way with other comics doesn't mean like another comic will receive you the same way. You know how like there's always like, you know, you'll probably always get in podcasts or something. I've heard in podcasts where like old school comics or, you know, like the current, like, you know, from like, you got your Jim Nortons, your Patrice O'Neill's, your Louis C.K.'s and your Chris Rock's. They all used to rib each other in a very harsh way, you know, like that Comedy Cellar type of setting where like, it's like, those are the guys. Those are the sharks right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have that thick skin and you got to be able to fire back.
Yeah.
That is,
but at the same time, like you have a rapport with that person.
Yeah, exactly. That's
like your friend, like you're friends with that person. Like obviously he does not have this relationship with this person.
No.
So he's fucking calling her out by name. You know, like you shouldn't do like you don't have that rapport with that person. Like you shouldn't do that. Or like, I feel if I was going to make fun of someone like that, maybe I'd talk to him first before saying it on national television, you know, I don't know. Like on the one, like, it's just, I'm so like, stuck between like fear of censorship and just being like, maybe just logically, you just shouldn't be a huge dick sometimes. And then also it's like, we're defending as comics, we want to defend whatever people say, but at the same time it's like, wait, but what are we defending though? Like, we're defending something that's pretty lazy.
Yeah,
you know, like we're defending like, oh, she's got fat rolls and she can't clean because she doesn't have an arm. Like, really? Mm-hmm. That's not a good joke. That's just like,
no,
just fucking lazy, you know.
It's lazy. And where's it coming from? Yeah. Like, why, like, out of all, like, Ari Shaffir, you could, well, I'm not calling him out, but I'm just saying, like, him as a person, as a comedian, he's been doing it for a very long time. He has a very, he has a great command of, like, comedy.
Yeah.
Like, why is that where you go? That's just like you said, it's lazy.
And why are you going to waste time on your Comedy Central special for that?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's, you know, I'm torn, but at the same time, it's like, dude, just don't be a dickhead like that. Maybe.
Yeah, just don't, you know, be a,
like,
dickhead.
Or don't make like lazy, don't make real lazy racist jokes sometimes. You know, like there's, you only have so much time in front of a camera. You only have so much time on stage. It's always limited. So why not spend that time doing something that's like better than that, you know? Like, it's not, I don't think it's asking that much, but also at the same time, I think people need to be able to fail, you know, like comedians, you got to give them that space. And like, sometimes jokes don't land. Sometimes you go a little bit too far and comics, the outrage, like, I understand if people are upset about it, but the outrage is disproportional in my opinion. He did a joke on Twitter. It didn't work really well. But then you can't be like, this guy fucking hates Jews. It's like, relax. Okay, like, okay, maybe you shouldn't make those anti-Semitic jokes, but just chill out. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't fucking hate Jews. He's not an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Let's just hope they don't listen to this. But whatever. I feel like, you know, it should be talked about, and I think. It's not an unreasonable thing to ask, but at the same time, it's I think there needs to be a balance, you know. Like, I think we should be like, hey, maybe we should not go in that direction, but I don't think it should be like, oh, fucking boycott this guy. This guy's horrible and he's racist. He's a horrible, like, chill. You know what I mean? Like, people need to chill, I think, a little bit. And the outrage machine is like, and I you know, Jim Norton makes such a good point with that. It's like the outrage machine is not there to make people more sensitive. It's like people are being selfish. They're not unselfishly trying to make the world a better place. They're selfishly getting mad because it makes them fucking feel good.
Yeah. It should also, and then the nature of the internet is that you can't, it's not like talking to a person.
Yeah.
Where like I could sit down and tell you, I see your rationale, Mike, but please stop. And this is why. In the internet, you just want to sound louder. And you only have so much, like you're only in command of so much of the keyboard where you just like jump to extremes to get to just get to your point. You want to reach a point, but you're jumping to extremes and to reach a fraction of your point. And you want to sound louder than the person next to you, and you want to reach the person you're trying to reach. But you know, it's like if people don't know how to use this tool effectively.
Yeah.
And it's a snowball, you know?
Ultimately, it's just a bunch of fucking narcissists for the most part.
just trying to
see how look at how fucking amazing I am. I wouldn't say anything like that. Like, oh, fuck you. You've said some fucked up shit before. All right, so you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up.
So, everybody, please tweet at us, at Black and Jew Pod.
What do you think?
We will respond. We love to hear from you. We love, love, love to hear from you. So let us know what you think. Send us articles. Do whatever. Or blackandjewpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up there. Or facebook.com/blackandjew. Is it Black and Jew Pod? facebook.com/blackandjewpod or Black and Jew Podcast?
Yeah, you got it.
Black and Jew Pod?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. facebook.com/blackandjewpodcast. Yeah, so hit us up. Let us know what you think. Hit me up on Twitter, at Mike Marianoff. Hit up Reggie, ratchet _ Reggie, because he's a ratchet hoe.
I am a definite ratchet hoe.
You're so ratchet.
I throw it back. I throw that boy pussy. I pop it.
Throw that boy pussy.
Also, hey guys, Mike too. You should check out the new Miss Marvel. It's just amazing. It's the new Miss Marvel. The one with the young girl. She's 16 and she has stretchy powers. It's an amazing comic book. Really well written, great art.
All right,
and I got back into. I torrented a bunch of comic books, and now I'm just blazing right through.
You got a new waifu. Oh, yeah. Torrented? You mean legally purchased?
Yes, that's what I mean. It was a torrent of enthusiasm to get these comic books. That's what I meant.
Amazing. All right. So until next time, folks.
Till next time. See ya.